Notice how many songs refer to the coming of Jesus Christ and God never leaving us through thick or thin, all the problems that are coming. I don't think this is actually a protege. I think it's another word. It starts with a P. What is it?
Prototype.
There. That's even better. So, once in a while, every few seconds, I make a mistake. A prototype. This morning, the sermonette man came down sick and didn't show up for services, and we knew it in advance. He did give me a call. But I took his sermonette time to actually read something that had a lot to do with the the sermon itself. And my wife said, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to do that this afternoon and keep the sermon within time? And I said, well, the Sabbath isn't until 6:20, so... That's not it, though. But I am going to read you something that I received on the way to Branson last week. It was last Friday. And there was a member in Salina that sent this to me. It's entitled Munich Security Conference. The German Foreign Minister Calls for a European Defense Union Within the Next 10 Years. And let me give you the link so you do know where it comes from. It's from www.dw.com/en/Munich-security-conference. And that should get you to this article. There's a couple other words in it, but that should get you there. What is interesting about this is it ties so much into what we've been recognizing and looking for all of these years, for the last 50 years, since the Second World War ended. And I say looking forward to, and that is the basic precursor to the kingdom of God, because we know that there are certain events that must transpire before the kingdom of God is set up. And what was so revealing in this article, and I can I think you can kind of see by the title itself, it almost tells the whole thing, the foreign minister calls for a European defense system. After World War II, the Germans were not to create any military whatsoever. And that was the same, of course, after World War I. They did anyway, and they did it in secret, and they did it in Russia. And they got away with making tanks and then, of course, later on airplanes. But we now have a world that does not like the United States. Excuse me. I might even take a sip of water here, which I usually don't. But the world does not like the United States. Europe does not like the United States. We're getting a black eye almost wherever we go. But what this article points out is what back in the 1970s, the late 1960s, we recognized would happen. And if you were around back then, you knew that there were scoffers. There were a couple books that were out concerning the Germans themselves and whether they would rise or stay, you know, a destroyed nation forever and never rise again in the same military power that they had previous to World War II, or previous or during World War II, I suppose. So this article, if published back in the 1960s or the early 70s, would cause the church to be so stirred up, if they would have read this in 1970, that you would have had a house full of people every single week. No one would have ever missed services. The church would have been as zealous as could be. So I'm going to read a few excerpts from it and then go through some of what is going to happen that basically ties into this article. We always read the news, publications, especially when it comes to the church or anything having to do with the Bible, in light of Bible prophecy or in light of Bible directions or guidance, the morality, for example, of the United States and the world, we look at in light of the standard of the Bible, of course. So I'll quickly go through some of this. Since I used 15 minutes this morning, we'll cut it down to 8 minutes, and I've already used probably 5. So The German foreign minister has called for greater defense efforts out of Europe. Greater defense efforts. Notice the word. Not offensive efforts, but greater defensive efforts. The foreign minister's name is Maas, M-A-A-S. And this was last Friday, actually, that this conference took place. It was about a 3 or 4 day conference. And he called on his country and all of Europe to take on a greater international security role in light of evolving relations with the United States. When he says evolving relations, he means that the United States is pulling back, that we do not want to put our money into defending Europe or put our money into keeping a power like Germany, although they don't say this because it is the Germans who are writing this, from rising again. But it's an evolving relationship, not only because they don't like to see the United States giving all of the wrong guidelines and the wrong help to the Europeans and to the Middle East. They basically are saying, we have to take over because we don't like what the United States is doing. For too long, we Europeans have shut our eyes to the uncomfortable reality of what a withdrawal of the U.S. military engagement means to us. It says the construction of a European security and defense union must be a strong European pillar of NATO. Germany is prepared to discuss, and I'm skipping through this, a European strategy related to France's nuclear weapon arsenal. Now, again, if we were back in 1950s, 1960s, and we saw this, and Germany was never to rise again at all, and we would see now that they would connect with France, who no doubt at the time, right after World War II, didn't have nuclear weapon arsenals, then it'd be like, man, this is happening so fast. Jesus Christ certainly is going to come very soon. And now it's interesting, we have a group of members who are under, I think, 30% were not even born or whatever. It was in 1990, I think it is, 30% of our members now didn't even exist, something to that effect is what it would be, 30%. So that shows you that we have a group of people, some among us, except for our older people like Mr. Willis, and I think there are 18 of us that are 72 years or older, or 70, over 70, 18 of us in this room that are over 70. So we would know what took place back there and what was being said. And then others read about it too, so it's not that, you know, you're ignorant at all. Even the youngest, even teenagers, are not necessarily ignorant. They know what happened. But what we're saying is they didn't live through it. They didn't see the attitude. They didn't see the zeal of the church at the time. And we did, and we saw that there was so many cries of wolf, wolf, and nothing happened. The wolf didn't come. And then wolf, wolf, the wolf didn't come. That basically it's like, you know, it's going to be a long time. And the Bible does talk about that. We'll come to those scriptures a little bit later. But here it says, going on, the president of Germany, Steinmeier, criticized the U.S. for neglecting its international duties. He said, year by year, we are distancing ourselves from the goal of international cooperation to create a peaceful world. Okay, so they want to be the security of the world. They want to create a peaceful world. And we'll see in the prophecies that I'm going to read here in a little bit, how they will bring temporary peace. You'll see the alliances that they're actually joined with, NATO allies will likely find themselves in a conflict during the meeting, and because, of course, you have some of the allies that belong to NATO who are more aligned with the United States. And so they will not like what the Europeans are doing, it said. This one fellow, the German defense minister, interesting what he says, he reaffirmed the need to continue the fight against the Islamic State. And I bring that out because it's like, well, there are Arabs over there, and they're not getting along anyway. And we all know the shortest book ever written in history is on Arab unity, right? It's true. The Arabs don't get along. So when we read in the Bible that the Arabs will get along, that they will be creating an alliance, and that Germany is going to join with them, that is interesting because they're going to do it to create peace. And there will be a time of peace. Going on just with one more statement, basically, the U.S. peace plan for Palestine will likely lead to conflicts at this year's MSC, what we're talking about here. European Foreign Policy Chief Borrell criticized the Israeli-friendly plan and called on EU foreign ministers to table their own ideas to promote peace. He warned the EU would be forced to act against such serious violations of international law if what is proposed by President Trump is followed in the Middle East, in Palestine. In fact, one of the fellows who was at this conference said of the plan that the United States has for Palestine and Israel, he said, as far as the Palestine state is concerned, it's Swiss cheese. So if you see the map that was proposed by President Trump, it's a little bit here. This is a Palestinian state here, then over here, and then way down here, all this territory in between. They will be easily controlled by Israel and not be able to fight against them. Now, we all know that you wouldn't want a Palestinian state anyway because the Palestinians do not want Israel to even exist. So why in the world would you allow, as Netanyahu would confirm, why would you allow any Palestinian state? They want to destroy Israel. So Israel has been a powder keg for years, and we'll go through some 9 points here. 9 points in the sermon that show kind of a step-by-step process leading to the return of Jesus Christ. And if we don't say too much about the return of Jesus Christ, at least it'll be 8 steps, and we all know that he is going to return. So what we have, and let's start out in Revelation 17, and think about what is stated here and what will become of it. Again, they call for, in the next 10 years, a strong military aligned with NATO, or maybe just NATO itself, because they will include themselves in it. Revelation 17, notice what is going to happen. Revelation 17, and let's start out in verse 12. The background of this is talking about the great harlot. It's talking about mystery Babylon the Great. The great harlot is called Babylon, and she is the mother of harlots. And verse 12 now, the 10 kings, or the 10 horns which you saw, are 10 kings who've received no kingdom in it yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So we're talking about the end time. Definitely, Revelation is about end time events with some previous history, but overall, the thrust of Revelation is the revealing of what's going to happen at the end of time. And we realize the background, we know Daniel, and we see that there's going to be 4 basic Gentile kingdoms throughout history from the time Jerusalem was destroyed. Okay, and the tribes of Judah and Levi, probably, and Benjamin went into captivity and did not return until the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. So what you have then is the Babylonians as the first Gentile kingdom, and then we have the Persians, they call them Medo-Persian Empire, then you have the Greco-Macedonian Empire, then you have the Roman Empire. And what we come down to in the book of Revelation would be the, I think I got them all covered, didn't I? The fourth one is the Roman Empire. And you come down to the legs and the feet. And we're looking now, when I say the 10 horns and the 10 kings, so never get dehydrated. We're looking then at these 10 kings with the 10 toes. Now, what's the easiest way to bring down a giant? Well, shoot him through the ears. Maybe that would bring him down quickly, too. One movie that I saw, and they couldn't take out this guy that was so strong. It was during one of the probably Persian Wars or whatever it was at the time. But anyway, they got to his feet and they put a spike through his feet. So basically, you knock the feet out and you have then the whole image coming down. And basically, that's what we see in Daniel 2, where Christ comes and he takes out the entire Gentile kingdom structure. The whole thing is taken down. And so this is the end time. Babylon is going to fall. And notice what it says. The 10 horns which you saw, 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. Now we all know that there is a beast. We all know that there is 10 kings. We all know there's a false prophet. We all know there's Babylon. Those four. There just is. Does Babylon exist? Well, Babylon has existed in many different ways throughout history. Babel. By the way, if you want to learn a foreign language, go to Babel. I thought that was interesting. Go to Babel. It's like, well, no. I hope people don't get confused when they learn that foreign language. But whatever the case, there's been Babylon around forever, and it stands for confusion, and it stands for immorality. And you have then Babylon, who is the mother. Mystery Babylon, the great, the mother. So the woman is riding the beast, right? The woman rides the beast. So you have a beast, you have the mother harlot, you have Babylon riding the beast. Now, what you have then with the 10 kings is they are going to receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So it's a different entity. And I'm not going into the false prophet here. But notice it says, these will make war with the Lamb. So once you have an alignment with the 10 kings with the beast, there they will fight along with the hordes, we think, the 200 million at the end time. But they will fight against Christ at his return. So definitely this is talking about the end time. Otherwise you don't have them fighting a lamb if it's not the end time, making war with Jesus Christ at his return. And then it says in verse 15, and he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And we'll see that this beast has power over them all. The harlot had power over them all. And if we went to Revelation 13, we would see the beast will also have power over them all. The 10 horns which you saw on the beast will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, and eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put it in their heart to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, to give their kingdom to the beast. The beast is not the 10 kings. The beast is separate from the 10 kings. Revelation 18, Babylon is destroyed. 10 kings destroy her. The 10 kings destroy Babylon. And that's exactly what it says. So what we have then in the beginning is these 10 nations, the 10 kings, the 10 toes, because Christ comes and what does he smash? He smashes the 10 toes. He smashes the image and it falls, and the times of the Gentiles end at that period of time. The times of Gentiles overall have been in effect from the fall of Jerusalem all the way until Christ returns. And you can see that in Luke 21, where it talks about the times of the Gentiles about to end. So what do we have then is point two. First one is 10 nations. Second one is the fall of Babylon, and I'll give you all 9 of them here so you kind of know where I'm going. You have the 10 nations. Two, you have the fall of Babylon and Jacob's trouble. I'm throwing Jacob's trouble in there because I'm not sure where it comes in and necessarily how it comes in, but Jacob's trouble could be 3.5 years, the whole period of time, or a shorter period. Jacob's trouble can include weather problems, where the weather, tornadoes, hurricanes, takes us out. It could be disease that destroys this nation. The coronavirus, is it, hitting from China now? I did a study of the Spanish influenza back in 1917, 1918, and from what I read, it was from China, so I don't know why they called it Spanish influenza, but could have been somebody coming from Spain and introducing it in the United States. Possibly that was what happened. But anyway, it was from China originally, and it's from pigs that go to birds, basically the same thing that happens now overall, and then spreads, in that case, throughout the world. And there were a lot of selling of war bonds in World War I in 1917 and 1918, and people who had the virus were spreading it in the air, you know, just breathing, just like this coronavirus. So we had, in fact, my dad's brother died. He had, there were six brothers, and the seventh actually died when my dad was maybe 8 years old or 7 years old from the Spanish influenza. And that's in Montana. How can anything hit Montana? It is so desolated, you know, and the cold kills everything anyway. Nothing can live up in Montana, including we human beings that are up there. But what I'm saying is it spread everywhere. It just did. And I was surprised because I looked at the statistics in Montana, and I was surprised at how many died from the Spanish influenza. It was just amazing. And I think there was only one place in the world. They quarantined all the ships that were coming into port, and there was no Spanish influenza in that port. So God's way does work, doesn't it? Okay, so you have the fall of Babylon. You have Jacob's trouble during this period of time. And Revelation 18 hits the fall of Babylon. Then you have the beast and 10 nations and your false prophet, point 3. 4, you have your Islamic or your Arab confederacy. 5, you have the attack by that confederacy of the Arabs against the northern kingdom. That's the beast in those 10 nations. 6, you have a counterattack, the beast and the 10 attack the Islamic State all the way down to Egypt. We'll see how Egypt comes into all of this. Then you have number 7, the beast surrounds Jerusalem, enters Jerusalem. Then you have 8, trouble from the north and the east. And I have an interesting report out of Hillsdale College that is quite revealing, that ties in with this north and east of Jerusalem. So you have the fall of Babylon, you have the time of Jacob's trouble. What's interesting here is Isaiah 16. I won't go to Jacob's trouble in Jeremiah 30, but let's go to Isaiah 16. Isaiah chapter 16. Send the lamb to the ruler of the land. This is verse 1 of Isaiah 16. Send the lamb to the ruler of the land, from Selah to the wilderness, to the mount of the daughter of Zion, for it shall be as a wandering bird thrown out of the nest. So shall be the daughters of Moab at the fords of Arnon. Now, as I mention Moab, I'm going to show you why this is so interesting. Those of you who have been around a long time, remember Isaiah 16, when we talked about the place of safety. So shall be the daughters of Moab at the fords of Arnon. What is interesting about this area of the world giving shelter to the outcasts of God, the escapees, so to speak, is that when the northern army does come down in counterattack, when the Palestinians or the Arabs attack, when they come back down, they will not take over or affect in any wrong way Moab and Ammon. Trying to think of the other word that goes with it. We'll come to it in a minute. But basically, it's the two cousin boys of Lot. Lot had, it wouldn't be Edom, I don't think. But they are in the Confederacy, definitely. But we'll come to it in a minute, or two, or three. But what you have is the northern army bypasses Moab, and it's a place of refuge Even though Moab is in a confederacy before this time, they pull out of the confederacy and they are not attacked. And we can see why I say that when we go to a certain prophecy in the Bible concerning another gigantic country that aligns itself with that confederacy. Take counsel, execute judgment, make your shadow like the night in the middle of the day, hide the outcasts, do not betray him who escapes, do not betray him who escapes. Now, this is unusual because when you take a look at what happened when Ezra and Nehemiah came down with the reestablishment of Jerusalem, the building of the wall, the building of the city, you know, they've been allowed by the king to come back down to Jerusalem. You see that Moab and Ammon were there and they were cast out because they had not previously allowed the Israelites to go through their land. So it's interesting that God uses the ones who originally wouldn't allow Israel to come through their land to be the ones who are a refuge to them at the end time. But anyway, let my outcast dwell with you, Moab, verse 4. Be a shelter to them from the face of the spoiler. And then we'll see it is at the time of the end. In mercy, the throne will be established and one will sit on it in truth. That would be Jesus Christ who sits on David's throne. And one will sit on it in truth in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking justice and hastening righteousness. So it's an end time prophecy. The Bible, by the way, is a puzzle. Just as we have it here, there are pieces here and there, and we have to have God's Spirit in order to put it together. And God gives us understanding as we need it. So you have the fall of Babylon. You have, and I think I'm probably getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but we have down to 8, the trouble from the north and from the east, and then the return of Christ. So that's the 10 nations, number 1, the fall of Babylon, Jacob's trouble, number 2, the beast plus the 10 nations and false prophet, number 3, Islamic State or Arab state, number 4, the attack toward the northern kingdom, number 5, then number 6, the beast counterattacks, number 7, the beast surrounds Jerusalem. And then you have number 8, troubles from the north and east. So I hope that made it clear going through the second time. So coming back then, what we have is the fall of Babylon. It will fall before you have the 10 kings joining the beast. It falls. It has to fall in order for prophecy to be fulfilled, according to Revelation 18. And the only way that the beast will be a great, great power that nobody can destroy is because they have those 10 nations joining them. So, number 3, the beast plus the 10 nations and the false prophet. Let's just go to Revelation 13. We could go to Revelation 11. But Revelation 13 covers the power of the beast. And we see in verse 2 that they are driven by Satan the devil. This is Revelation 13:2. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority. Then we come down to verse 4. They worship the dragon who gave him authority, gave authority to the beast. And then who is able to make war with him? There is no power on earth. Right now it's the United States. Our military can take on anybody. We are not the beast, okay? Some people might think that we are the beast, but we are not. We are Jacob. Literally, when you had Isaac crossing his hands and blessing Ephraim and Manasseh, he said, "Let my name be placed on them." So in Bible prophecy, when we read the name Jacob, we can say, "Let my name be placed on them." And it's not so far out to say it's basically the countries of Ephraim and Manasseh. Not Reuben, for example. Not France. Because they seem to be aligning themselves, as we know, with Germany. So this is at the end time. It's going to be 42 months. Time, times, and half a time. And then in verse 4, Seven, that is, seven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. Who had that authority before? Who was sitting on top of every tribe, tongue, and nation? Revelation 17, it says, the waters where the harlot sat were peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. Basically, when the harlot is destroyed, then you have the beast who destroyed, the ten nations who destroyed the Babylon, and you get rid of that power. It's replaced by, Babylon is replaced by the beast. Very clear. It just states it as it is. So authority was given over every tribe, tongue, and nation. Now, we have the Arab states, we call it. And let's go to Psalm 83, a very interesting prophecy, Psalm 83. I've said so many times, when I think of this prophecy, I go to Jeremiah, because there were so many prophecies against so many countries, and I kind of head there, but it's actually in Psalm 83, is where you find this prophecy. And sometimes we wonder, well, how can there be a prophecy in the Psalms? Well, David was a prophet, wasn't he? So David prophesied. Actually, in this case, it was Asaph, who was also a prophet, no doubt. It says, do not keep silent, O God, verse 1 of Psalm 83. Do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O God, for behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. So when they hate God, what is the context? They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. Who are the sheltered ones? Well, the sheltered ones would be the same as you find in that prophecy of Isaiah chapter 16. Because they are sheltered in Moab. That's what it says. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. Is it spiritual Israel now that they're talking about? Is this a cutting the nation off? I think it probably is both. God, the enemies of God want the spiritual Israelites to be cut off and destroyed, and the physical Israelites. But here, when it talks about being a nation, the nation of Israel may be remembered no more. So how are they going to do it? Who's going to do it? They have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you. The tents of Edom, Ishmaelites, Moab, Hagarites, Gebel, Ammon, Amalek, Philistia, with the inhabitants of Tyre. Now, let's remember what we read. We read that Germany wants to be a security force, and they want to bring peace. So if they're a security force and they want to bring peace, wouldn't they have to join with the confederacy of Edom, Ishmaelites, Moab, the Arab states, to bring peace? Because there's no peace right now. One group, then another group, you know, you control one, then the other rises. But notice it says Assyria joins with them. So there's a confederacy, and it's interesting the way it just states it. They're not part of this group. They're not part of the Arabs at all. They're a different peoples totally. But it says Assyria will join with them. Basically, what we have here is Europe saying, we want to join with them. We want to help them bring peace. We don't like Trump's plan. We believe that there should be a Palestinian state. So if they join with them, then there can be peace in the world, right? And these are the ones who do not like Israel. So it's pretty clear where we find this king of the south. Our literature has said for years that Egypt is the king of the south. Okay, so that's Psalm 83, very clear. So what we have next is the attack against the northern kingdom. Now, It's interesting that there's not going to be peace, 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 and there is no peace, but you find in Daniel, and we always use Daniel because it is so concise, I guess we would say, with about five scriptures in Daniel 11 to show us what is going to take place. Covers a lot of territory in just a very few verses in Daniel 11. So as much as we would like to go to somewhere else to read this and to find the same thing, basically the summation is so good in Daniel, we just go there. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Now, why does the king of the south attack this northern kingdom? By the way, when you read Joel, it has in Judah, the area of Judah, you have a northern kingdom coming down, Joel chapter 1, Joel chapter 2. You see it's talking about a northern kingdom that is a strong military kingdom. They are very well organized. They have plenty of power. They don't step on each other. They don't have their troops killing their own troops, basically. And to read that is quite revealing, again, when it talks about the north. It's coming from the north, it says, north of Judah. So, but the king of the south now, for some reason, this confederacy is not going to last, is it? It is just not going to last. So what is happening here? There's actually a prophecy in Isaiah 30, because we talked about Assyria joining with this group, but we find this alliance also has to do with Egypt, that these Arab states are going to be going to Egypt also to get their power. And how many of you remember the last shakeup and the Muslim Brotherhood taking over in Egypt? And how they were aligning basically with the Palestinians. If they would have stayed in power, it would have quickened prophecy, the fulfillment of prophecy. But guess who took over? The generals took over. If you don't have the generals in power, you don't have power. So if the military is not behind the leader, whether they're a dictator or anybody else, then Mussolini is gone. Okay. You don't have protection. You have to have protection from the military. So right now, the generals have taken over from the Muslim Brotherhood. Seemingly, that will change in the future because you're going to have a confederacy that goes to Egypt for help. And this army that's coming down, Daniel 11, goes all the way down to Egypt and takes over Egypt and Ethiopia. So Isaiah 30 is a prophecy that we read. Isaiah 30, it's talking about woe to the Egyptian alliance is the subheading. I get all my sermons from subheadings. No, it is. It's just revealing that they know, not the translators, but those who put the Bible together know how to sum things up at times. Woe to the rebellious children, says the Lord, who take counsel but not of me, and who devise plans but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin, who walk to go down to Egypt and have not asked my advice. So what group is going to go down to Egypt to get help, do you think? Well, it's going to be the Confederacy. It'll be the Arabs. They've not asked my advice to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh. It's not going to work. And to trust in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore, the strength of Pharaoh shall be to your shame, and trust in the shadow of Egypt shall be your humiliation. I am not totally sure why there's going to be attack by the Arab states, who've made peace with Assyria for a while. I do not know what's going to cause the attack. Years ago, we said it's going to be oil that is the main problem in the Middle East. Now we have fracking. And the United States has all this oil and all this natural gas. I think we have some of the highest quantities of natural gas probably in the world. Maybe not. It could be tapped perhaps all over the earth. But whatever the case, I'm not totally positive, but something is going to upset the king of the south, and they will attack along with Egypt, and it's going to be to their shame because it's not going to work. Egypt and all the armies of Egypt, I think we're familiar with Janes, J-A-N-E-S, and it shows, gives statistics of all the military power that each country has. And Egypt is one of those countries that has a lot of power. They would be one of the strongest. By the way, do you remember when the attack took place on the Twin Towers, what group of people were on those planes? Saudi Arabia. So do you think that they are pro-American? Or do you think that they're just a nice, deceitful nation that knows what to do and when to do it to stay on the side of the United States until such time that they don't need to? Saudi Arabians. And you think, well, Saudi Arabians, they are our friends, aren't they? And well, no, I wouldn't think so. There were 11 of them, weren't there, if I remember right? So it's like you start putting these things together, and certainly people wouldn't be deceitful. Certainly world leaders wouldn't be deceitful, would they? Okay, so you go on, then it's to their shame because the alliance is not going to work. Strength of Pharaoh shall be your shame, verse 3. Trusting in the shadow of Egypt shall be your humiliation. Well, why would it be? The king of the north comes down and takes them all out anyway. Then it's not going to happen, except that the attack from the northern kingdom is going to bring them, that is the king of the north, all the way down into the Holy Land. So you have then the attack of the northern kingdom by the Arabs, the counterattack that goes all the way down to Egypt, and the alliance doesn't work for that group. Number 7, the beast surrounds and enters Jerusalem. Let's go to Luke 21. Luke 21. First of all, Luke 21 says the following. In verse 31, let's go there first. Luke 21, 31. So you likewise, when you see these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near. So as we have this sequence of events, and I may be, you know, off on some of these. I'm not a prophet. I didn't get a vision last night. So if I'm missing some details here, I am reading prophecies in the Bible, and I'm trying to put the puzzle together. Sometimes you have a piece that you just don't know where it fits. I'm not talking about me because I don't like puzzles. I've never worked a puzzle. I shouldn't say that. There was, when I was about 5 years old, I had one that had five pieces to it, and I did that puzzle. It took me only 4 or 5 days. So, I do know a lot of people who've worked puzzles. I've visited a lot of people, and they have the puzzle out, and they're just trying to figure out these last few, well, probably the first few pieces are the hardest. Kind of comes together, especially if you have a picture, I understand. So my wife still puzzles me, and I have a lot of pictures of her. We try to pick on our wives here as much as we can. You have then the surrounding of Jerusalem, verse 20. So it says, "You, when these things happen, you know the kingdom is near." There's a term, it's in King James, and also sometimes it's translated this way in the New King James, at hand. At hand. So if you look that up, it's used about 7 times. And you can read in the Gospels where Jesus Christ said the kingdom is at hand. But, you know, if you take a, you know what, I have nothing written on this, but if you take a look at things from God's standpoint of view, and you see that this is eternity right here, and you spot where we are, and that this 6,000 years is the spot here, and it's not even close to a good ratio, I would think, because you would have to have, how do you do eternity, and then put a spot on eternity. So when there's 2,000 years left, the kingdom of God is at hand, right? And also with that, too, I think there was a double meaning, and that is that Jesus Christ was among them. You know, the representative of the kingdom of God was right there, and the Messiah was going to be proven to be the Messiah also. I would think that, again, that's what it was all about. But at hand, there's about 7 times in the Bible which talks about at hand. Okay, let's go to verse 20. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Then let those in Judea flee to the mountains, because that city is going to be taken, isn't it? Zechariah says half the city is going into captivity, and the other half will stay. As I've said so many times, the Palestinians will say, and it's going to be the Israelites that are sent into captivity. Verse 22, these are the days of vengeance that all things which are written may be fulfilled. That's kind of a conclusion, isn't it? But woe to those who are pregnant, to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So, the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled when Jerusalem is no longer trampled. In other words, there is no foreign force there. They are not being controlled. That is, Jerusalem won't be controlled by those that are enemies of God. And that is when Christ comes back to this earth. The times of the Gentiles end when Jesus Christ takes Jerusalem. And the times of the Gentiles have lasted again through all of this time, from the first trampling of Jerusalem to the end of the last trampling of Jerusalem, basically, is what you have. So, we have then in Luke 21, scripture telling us that we should see that these things that are happening, tells us the kingdom of God is near, and we should take heed. Verse 34, I won't go into it, but it says to watch. Watch what's happening. Again, I repeat, if when you were in the church in 1970, how many were attending services in 1970? So if in 1970 you read this report, it would have been just absolutely amazing. How did the Germans get in charge of so many people so soon? How did they become, if they were as strong in 1970 as they are now, one of the strongest GDPs in the world, strongest countries overall in every way except the military? I think actually they have scientists who are German or Jewish scientists, probably, as before World War II, even helping them out. I wouldn't doubt that. It was the Germans who, the German Jews, who did so much to develop weapons for the Germans before World War II. I think they've got Tiger tanks that, again, will have the Sherman. There's no Sherman tanks now, I don't think. But Sherman tanks, remember when they blasted away at the Tiger tanks, the shells bounced off the Tiger tanks, and the Panzer tanks. It's like, man, what did they have? And in order to destroy them, we had to basically use our fighting, our men to attack, and then our Sherman tanks to go around. It was just... that was the only way. We couldn't stop the Tiger tanks. And they didn't produce enough of them. That was the problem. I'm not trying to give the Germans any ideas of what to do in the next war either. And by the way, there is a book out called The Fourth Reich. And there's a lot of neo-Nazis in the world. And why we allow neo-Nazis in the United States, I don't know. I can't figure that out. So we have then the surrounding of Jerusalem, and then trouble from the northeast. I'm going to read from one last article here, and I did tell you I had something from Imprimis. This is what it looks like, Hillsdale College. You can order it. It's free of charge. And I'll skip most of it because it's just talking about how, and this is a retired general, Stephen Quast of the Air Force, who's saying that we should be developing weapons in space. This is what it's about. How many of you take this? It's very good. I recommend it. It's a quick read. It says, America's greatest competitor for the high ground of space is communist China. And I read this because in Daniel, it says there will be troubles that come out of the north and east. And if you're in Jerusalem, where is the north and where is the east? Russia and China. And we thought maybe Japan and many other countries who would join in. But the greatest competitor for the high ground of space is communist China, which is already engaged in building effective space capabilities. America is not, and unless it gets off the mark soon, that's meaning off their gluteus maximus, China will dominate the economy and domain of space. Our Air Force today talks about our Air Force a little bit. It says, the Chinese are open about their plan to become the dominant power in space by 2049. Oh, that's okay. We can sit back and drink beer and eat chocolate. And it's like, you know, you think in those terms and it's like, oh, we have time. Oh, I'll be dead by then, so I don't have to worry about it too much. And this is where becoming lax can be a problem. I think all of the world basically is in a Laodicean state. The whole world is just in that state. Everybody knows everything, and nobody can tell anybody else anything, right? Everybody knows it all. And it doesn't matter if they don't know it all because they create what they know to be correct, right? So you don't have any morality that you need to teach anybody because whatever they think in their mind is right. So that's the whole world is that way. So you have 2049. If China stays on its current path, it will deploy nuclear propulsion technology and solar power stations in space within 10 years. This will give it the ability, within 10 years, to beam clean energy to anyone on Earth. And the power to disable any portion of the American power grid and paralyze our military anywhere on the planet. Now that is quite a statement. That's why this Air Force general says we have to develop space. Now, is China going to? They're spending multi-trillions of dollars right now, counting the future, I would think. A couple more quotes here. China is developing the kind of technologies required to do so, that is hypersonic missiles and aircraft, 5G, telecommunications, artificial intelligence, 3D printing, quantum computing, and robotics. And they want them to knock out anything that we have. China's goal is to have the capability to shut down America's computer systems and electrical grids at any time or place of its choosing. Now, when we read that there's trouble out of the north and the east, I would think there's going to be trouble out of the north and east. Don't you think? You know, we have the ability, I don't know if you know this, but we have the ability to actually talk like Dick Tracy back in 1952, your watch, and to have, you know, it answer you. It'll actually talk to you. Isn't that amazing? Now I'm being stupid, right? But what I'm saying is this was so far out in 1992, there was a fellow who worked in a group. This would be a brain, you know, brainstorming group of people. He said, Mr. Sargent, he said, he's a church member. He said, we will have the capability of talking to our phone. The base will be at our home computer, and it'll pick it up, and it will relay a signal to a satellite, which will relay down to a library. You can see what he was thinking at that time. It will relay back the information, back to the satellite, back to your home base, and out to your watch. Was he far off? He was getting there, but did he ever think you could just go, boing, tell me where my wife is? So she's got it, you know. Today, you really have to have smart criminals if they want to get away with anything. But you can track anybody. It's just amazing what we can do. And we take it for granted. But it's amazing what really is going to be done. When you read of this technology, it is something else. And I don't even know. I'm not good at technology except to use it. I'm not even good at using it that well. But it is amazing. I heard one thing, and it's getting close now to 5 minutes after. But one thing that I heard not too long ago was with this 5G, with artificial intelligence. And I was talking to someone in the church who works with Tesla, and another fellow, an elder in the church, who's worked with, whose wife works with artificial intelligence. And she said, you can be in a huge, next to a big building, and if you've got 5G, they can download almost everything in that building like this. Is that right, Nathan? That sounds far out, but it's just amazing what is going on. And I'm looking at a lot of people here to ask anybody else, but I'm sure there are a couple of others of you who are really into the technology part. So what we have then is China, a country that Germany and the Northern Kingdom should be concerned with, although I think both will have the same technologies. So they're going to fight Christ from outer space, probably. When they see Christ coming, they'll start fighting him from outer space. And they'll put their shield up. And I think they'll stop Christ for a while, won't they? Not a bit. So you wonder about all these movies today, and, you know, what mind is in all of this, creating these movies with these space aliens coming with all this power? I think Satan the devil is just saying, yeah, I know what's going to happen at the end time. Get used to it. Only Satan is the one who supposedly is going to win. So we have Matthew 24, the Lord delays his coming. We have Matthew 25, the church is going to be sleeping. We have Hebrews 10, which says, come to church, the more you see, the closer you see. Don't keep yourself from coming to church. And you have 1 Peter 4 and verse 7. I'm going to end there. 1 Peter 4 and verse 7. First Peter chapter 4 and verse 7. The end of all things is at hand. And this is Peter talking almost 2,000 years ago. The end of all things is at hand. Be serious and watchful in your prayers. Be serious and watchful in your prayers. And above all things. So he's saying, next, above all things, make sure you understand the sequence of events in prophecy so you can be saved. And the answer is, it doesn't say that. So prophecy is interesting, and it should help us to, well, how do you know the end is approaching? In Hebrews, how would you know? Hebrews 10, it says, you know, as you see the day approaching, how would you know that? Except that we have these prophecies. So we know the day is approaching, and the more we see these prophecies being fulfilled, the more zealous we should have, the less excuse we should have for not doing whatever it may be that we put off doing that we should be doing. And it could be, a myriad of things. So it says, above all things, have fervent love for one another. If the church is separated, if it's split, if people are offended with each other, if we are listening to others who speak, actually bearing a false witness. Did you know the word bearing is receiving as false witness even more than bearing it? It's only used three times to bear a false witness. It's receiving as false witness is horrible, God says. It's one of those abominations. So if we're fighting each other, we're going to consume each other, God says. So above all things, have fervent love for one another. Cover each other's sins as much as possible. Take care of problems between the brethren. Love will cover a multitude of sins. So that's kind of the takeaway in all of this. We know it's coming. We see what's happening. We need to be zealous. And in all things, though, we need to become perfect like God and have the very agape love that God has for us. We have to have that same love for each other.